Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We got you covered here in Hour 2. Julian Edlow is going to be dropping by, NBA analyst for DraftKings. You want to check it out. But our conversation is going to continue. Big games, big matchups today. Colts-Vikings is underway. Ravens-Browns this afternoon, and the Dolphins and the Bills. But Sean, I actually want you to weigh in on Kyler Murray. Unfortunately, he's confirmed out for the season with his torn ACL. He will miss the remainder of 2022. And unfortunately, there's a lot of uncertainty at the quarterback position for the Cardinals next year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them because not just he's going to miss the remainder of this year, but due to the timing of when he tears it in here in mid-December, he's probably going to miss a good chunk of the 2023 season as well. As for Kyler, I mean, obviously, you kind of hope for the best in these kind of scenarios, tearing your ACL. It's obviously going to be a tough rehab coming up for him. But on the bright side, this is kind of why you sign the extension when Kyler signed his. That's why he pushed right so hard for it. He's already going to get his, I think it's well over $100 million guaranteed no matter what. So in that sense, it's good for him. But maybe this is something. I know Lamar Jackson's dealing with a much less severe knee injury than Kyler got on Monday, but this is something where that's the risk that Lamar is running playing without a contract for next year.
Former Sooner sensation Kyler Murray, yep, he is out. But I want you to weigh in on a former Oklahoma Heisman winner, and that, of course, is Baker Mayfield. And he is set to start against the Packers in primetime. What an inspiring performance in his first game as a Ram.
Yeah, I remember I was blown away that the idea that he was even going to play on Thursday night. And then he comes in and leads 2 touchdown drives in the fourth quarter to storm all the way back. So, yeah, I think Baker Mayfield, he really showed something in that game. Again, barely not just know the plays, barely know who he's playing with. Hasn't been able to throw to most of his receivers very much. And to come in and have that performance, I mean, I don't know anyone who's had more of a roller coaster career than Baker Mayfield, where the highs are super high, and then right when you count him out, then he comes back with another performance like that, and then the roller coaster continues. So, yeah, really hats off to Baker.
Hour 2 underway, coming up next here at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
All right, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker Campbell. Many different ways to connect. We love our listeners. You guys are amazing. Chime in on the conversation at eRadio Sports. Info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. We always provide the biggest and the best in sports. And I'm super excited because it's time to hit the hardwood. We're going to talk some NBA. And yes, it is early in the NBA season, but already teams and players, there have been some that have exceeded expectations. So we are thrilled to have back with us from DraftKings, and he's going to weigh in on some of the biggest storylines, and that is Julian Edlow, a host of the Unreasonable Odds podcast. It is a must listen. Hello, Julian. Are you ready for 2023?
Ready for 2023. You know, we got the football bowl season going on. We're mid-NBA in college hoops, so it's always a good time of the sports season, so that's fine by me.
Yeah, I was telling you off air, we have directed so much of our attention and focus on NFL and college football. I'm like, we got to talk some basketball. And so I want to get from you, what has been the biggest surprise of the 2022-23 season so far? We're at the one-third mark.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these teams with win totals set in like the low to mid 20s have been pretty good. And I think the main one that everyone's talking about is the Utah Jazz, who just came out blazing. They had the one seed in the West for a period of time.
Yeah.
After trading Rudy Gobert and getting in all those picks, you know, you get Danny Ainge in the front office, you're supposed to be tanking. And they're not. So I think Utah is a surprise. The Indiana Pacers, another team with a win total in the mid-20s that came out playing pretty well, although they've regressed a little bit. The Oklahoma City Thunder, not that they're anywhere special in the standings, but they, you know, against the spread, they've been a great bet. They seem to hang in games against really good teams. So, yeah, I would say those are three, just to name a few, of the teams that we expected to be pretty poor this season and have actually been pretty competitive.
What about some of the biggest disappointments?
I mean, disappointments... Do the Warriors count as a disappointment?
Sure,
because they're floating around 500, but they're a different team at home. They win all their home games. We saw that Saturday night game last week against Boston where they kind of show up and say, hey, we're still here. We can still compete. We can flip a switch when we want to flip it. But now with Curry hurt and going to miss some time, they could spiral, and they've been a team that's really struggled to win on the road. So until they figure out winning on the road, they've been a disappointment. I think the Phoenix Suns, they haven't been very good. They've had some guys dinged up, but that Game 7 loss last year to the Mavericks really hurt them. And then the Sixers. Sixers haven't been good in the East. I know Embiid's missed time. Harden missed a chunk of time and is back. Maxey is out and going to miss more time. So they just need to get healthy, but they have not exceeded expectations at all under Doc Rivers' whole tenure there as coach. And this year, when it was supposed to kind of take a step forward, it just hasn't yet. So I think they've been a big disappointment as well.
NBA analyst with DraftKings, Julian Edlow. He's been on our program and our network many times, Sports Map Radio. And let's go out west and let's talk some Lakers. LeBron James is on pace to break Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's scoring record in late February. I want to talk about his legacy. You know, when I just think about LeBron, he's a very polarizing figure. You either love him or you hate him. So when he hangs it up, how do you think he's going to be remembered?
Well, hopefully not for too much of his tenure with the Lakers. I left them off the disappointing teams because I don't know if we can even qualify them as a disappointment. This is just kind of what they've been year after year since winning the title in the bubble, which was a completely different type of season. But, yeah, I mean, LeBron individually is going to go down as absolutely a top five player of all time, maybe a top two or three player of all time, depending on where you want to rank him. You would have liked to see some more rings, but he's not done. I don't know if he's necessarily in position to get another one, especially if he's going to be going to whatever team lands his son, as he says he's going to do. So we'll see where that is. But, you know, his legacy is going to be different than a Jordan or a Kobe because he bounced around, won rings with three different teams. But he's going to go down just in terms of longevity based on the era that he plays in and based on coming in at 18 out of high school and being NBA ready right away. He's going to have all these longevity records that, you know, your Jordans and your Kobes don't have. So individually, I think he's going to go down as good as anybody. But if he finishes behind Jordan and Kobe with the rings, as we kind of think that he will, I think that does kind of keep him from breaking ahead of either of those guys for sure.
When he left his hometown for Miami, how much did that tarnish or damage his legacy, or did it?
I mean, there was maybe a group of people that didn't like it at first, but now, you know, that was 12 years ago and or more than 12 years ago. And we see all these guys moving around. Kevin Durant getting beat by the Warriors,
right,
and then joining the Warriors and winning rings with them. And it just kind of has become a little bit more normalized. So I think that was a bigger deal at the time. And the way that the NBA has kind of transpired since then, whether he started that trend or not, I think it's a little more forgotten and becoming a little more normalized. This is what guys of this era do. And guys of the Jordan, Bird, Magic era just kind of stuck it out with their teams and, you know, bring different role players in and try and win with their squad.
Julian Edlow with us, Sports Map Radio Network, NBA analyst with DraftKings. Let's talk about the Lakers. What are some of your takeaways, and what have we learned from them so far?
They can be a fun team. They play very fast. Their transition defense is terrible. They're a good team if you're, you know, in the betting market looking to bet some overs. They can come through for you there. But I think that their season can kind of be summed up from that Celtics game. I think everybody was watching on Tuesday night. I stayed up until 1 a.m. here on the East Coast watching it. Celtics up 20 points. They go scoreless for nearly 7 minutes. Lakers go on like a 30-4 run, get up 13 with about 4 minutes to go. The game is theirs, and they let the Celtics come all the way back, get that game into overtime, and then lose in overtime on their home floor. They're just not a team that can put together wins. They've been missing the playoffs with LeBron, and the pieces, the way that team is built, the pieces around LeBron are not, you know, exactly what you're looking for in today's NBA. You want to space the floor with shooters that they don't really have. So they're playing a lot of guys out of position. And you have a Russell Westbrook coming off the bench that doesn't really gel. So I think the Lakers have plenty of issues when it comes to winning, and it's probably going to be another letdown season for them, which, again, you know, LeBron's at the end. I'm sure he would love another ring. It creates a very interesting situation as to how he's going to finish his career and try and find a way to get one more.
What about Anthony Davis? What can you share?
Anthony Davis was one of my favorite prospects coming out of Kentucky, as I've had in a while. And I feel like, you know, he's now won a championship with the Lakers. He's put up the individual statistics, but outside of that one bubble championship, he has not been much of a winner. And he also hasn't been a guy that can stay on the floor. He taps out with a lot of injuries, as we at DraftKings, you know, famously know. Obviously, we're a daily fantasy sports company. People want to play big names like Anthony Davis in daily fantasy, and he winds up leaving a lot of these games and not coming back, and leaving guys that put him on their roster, you know, a little bit angry with that decision. So that's kind of the way I think of him right now. I'm not as impressed with his mentality, although he has all the talent in the world. Like, he's been on a dominant stretch recently. But I need to see more from Anthony Davis, and I think LeBron and the Lakers would feel the same way, because they're not able to get wins with that duo right now.
Mm-hmm. Julian Edlow, DraftKings host of the Unreasonable Odds podcast. You can check them out online. And you're a Boston guy. You're a Celtic guy and cover them very closely. So do they have what it takes to come out of the East this year and potentially win a championship?
Oh, absolutely. They were right there last year. They had a 2-1 lead in the NBA Finals. They flipped the switch in January after, you know, last year's Celtics would have lost that game to the Lakers that I just mentioned. And this year they kind of get off the mat and turned themselves around with almost no time to do so, and were able to get the win. I think they learned a lot down the stretch of last season. They were up 2-1 in the NBA Finals. They had a lead late and almost went up 3-1 on the Warriors. And then they wind up letting three in a row go and losing to a more experienced team. This year, you bring in a Malcolm Brogdon, who's been fantastic for them. He'll be in the running for sixth man of the year. Rob Williams hasn't played for them yet. Arguably their best individual defender, who will come back at some point in time very soon. And you can see that they kind of have that mentality this year. So I the Celtics are the favorites in the East for a reason. I do think they'll wind up coming out of the East and have a really good shot to beat whoever comes out of the West. This is a better team, both in terms of the talent and the mental edge than we saw out of Boston last year.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. NBA analyst with DraftKings, also host of the Unreasonable Odds podcast. Check him out. And that is Julian Edlow. Great way to kick off hour two at Sports Map Radio Network. Have a great weekend and happy holidays. Thank you, Julian.
All right. Thanks for having me. Same to you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell. I want to welcome you in to Hour 2 of Sports Map Radio Network and the Big E Sports Show. Mark it down Saturdays 1 to 3 Eastern exclusively on our network. And if you are joining us for the first time, you know what? We pride ourselves on delivering the biggest and the best in sports. Always have some incredible guests like our next one. And that is Larry Miller, former PGA pro and author. You can check him out, LarryMillerGolf.com. How are you doing this Saturday afternoon, Larry?
Well, doing great. Got a little bit cooler weather, which is nice for golf, and we don't have to you know, suffer with December being 83 degrees anymore. And so it's really pleasant. And, yeah, it's a nice to have the change.
Well, let's take time to highlight a unique experience and that is underway this weekend. 20 of golf major champions and their families are competing in the PNC Championship. Super cool event. We always look forward to this, right? It's the third year that Tiger and his son Charlie Woods are in action. They finished seventh place in 2020. And last year, remember, they were runner-up second in 2021. So who knows? Perhaps this year will be their magical one and they win it all. What do you think about this powerful combination between these two?
Yeah, I think it's they have a much better chance this year to win because of the development of Charlie. The way he's come along, what is he, 13 now?
Yes.
And if you haven't seen that golf swing, take a look at it because it is really special. It's just a gorgeous, almost technically perfect golf swing. And he's hitting it really long. He's 13. Of course, all 13-year-olds hit it long. They're so flexible. But, no, I think, you know, and Tiger says that he can hit all the shots. He just has trouble walking right now. So if he's his usual self and the way Charlie's come along, I think they've got to be the favorites to win this thing, really. So it's going to be interesting to see. I know last year John Daly and his son won it. I think, you know, John Daly, of course, he's erratic, and so is his son. They both can have days when they're fabulous players, shoot low numbers, but then they can go the other way, too. I think Tiger and Charlie are much more consistent in their play, and if they're on, I think they're going to win it. But you got a lot of good teams out there. You got Nick Faldo and his son, and you've got Tom Watson and Henrik Stenson. I mean, it's got to be a lot of fun to go and play that event with your son, and so it's fun to watch, and I can't wait to see it again this year.
You know, we were talking about this in hour one, Gary Williams from SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio, about, you know, through the years we have seen, we have witnessed and watched Tiger Woods do such incredible things on the golf course, but we're seeing a different side to him, you know, watching him as we're talking about the father-son relationship and just how special this is. I find it just fascinating to watch. And, you know, what can we learn from it, right? I'm a golf mom. I'm like, what can I learn from him?
Well, I think the golf parent, you know, number one, has to be, of course, supportive in every way, you know, emotionally,
sure.
And
yeah.
Psychologically, and even from a standpoint of, you know, of supplying all the necessary equipment and the lessons and everything else. That's their main job, you know, as a golf parent, is to be supportive in every way you can.
Yes.
What you don't want to do is you don't want to get too overbearing with you know, hovering over the player,
yeah.
And making them feel pressure because, you know, when a youngster like that is performing and the parent is right there looking over their shoulder, you know, the kid feels a lot of pressure to impress the parent, and that's not fair to the kid. And so it's better to be supportive but also have a little bit of a distance there when it comes to watching them play and rooting for them, you know. And also you don't want to get too involved with giving advice, with golf advice. That's the coach's deal. You know, that's his job or her job to coach the player. So I think that's important. But they have to be there in the background, supportive. And I know my parents were like that. My dad introduced me to the game, and both of my parents they gave me every tool that I needed to develop my passion. And that's what a parent has to do. And so, anyway, we all should be appreciative of that. And I think, you know, a lot of people that I know, a lot of good players that I know came up exactly the same way, where their dad, they followed their dad around the course and ended up playing. So they were led to the game by their fathers. And so that's another reason this father-son tournament is so special, because you have that that relationship from the beginning.
Former PGA Pro author Larry Miller with us. He joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. And, you know, you were just talking about some of the memories that you have, you know, growing up with your dad on the golf course. Is there one in particular? Do you have a favorite one, Larry? Would you mind sharing?
You mean as far as what he taught me?
Yes.
Number one, first thing was to respect the game and the etiquette of the game and the rules of the game, because, you know, with no rules, there is no game.
Right.
And golf is a special game where, you know, in a sense where you've got much more sportsmanship involved and etiquette, you know, with other competitors. You don't see that in other sports. You know, you don't see tennis players rooting for each other. They're trying to beat each other's brains out, you know.
Right.
And every sport is like that.
Yeah.
But not golf. I mean, golf literally, you know, you don't wish ill on your opponent. You want them to play well, but you want to beat them. And so you want to beat them at their best. And it just, you know, and of course the rules of golf are sacred rules, you know, that have been around for centuries. And so my dad, right from the beginning, you know, made me aware of the etiquette of the game, and respecting the golf course, respecting your equipment, and respecting your opponents. And you'd want to be a gentleman out there on the course. And so that's the way I came up, and that's the way most of the people that I know that played the tour with me and or after me or before me all did the same thing. And it's a game where you rarely see someone trying to violate, you know, those sacred etiquette rules or rules of the game.
Well, you know, you're providing some great tips for all the golf parents out there. And one thing I would also emphasize, too, is developing the entire golfer, not just having an emphasis only on outcome and winning tournaments, but, you know, encouraging them in other, you know, all filling all the quadrants, I always like to say.
Yeah, that's right. And just try to do your best and let the chips fall where they may. You know, you can't force things. And in golf, you know, it's a solitary game, you know, where you're really not playing against opponents unless it's match play. But in regular tournament golf, it's stroke play. You're really playing against the golf course, against the scorecard. And you're trying to beat the scorecard or beat the golf course or beat the terrain, if you want to look at it that way. Every golf course is laid out on a piece of land, and that's terrain. And you're trying to defeat it with your shots and your strategy. And that's a big thing is course management and strategy. And so, you know, when we talk about Charlie Woods, and I think I talked about this on another show with you, I think that what remains to be seen with Charlie Woods is he obviously has unbelievable physical skills. But what does he have upstairs? You know, is he going to have the same course management ability and strategies that his dad had? And the other thing is the emotional makeup of the person. You know, do you have that? Not everybody can fly an airplane and get up there and solo for the first time.
Yeah.
You don't have the stomach for it. You don't have the guts for it. And in golf, when the heat gets on and you've got intense pressure to make a cut or win a golf tournament, you need to have the right emotional makeup to withstand that pressure and still perform at your best. And so we'll see how that turns out with him. But if he has all that, then he probably can't miss.
Former PGA Pro author Larry Miller, LarryMillerGolf.com. Larry, let's move ahead and let's get some highlights from the 7th edition of the match. It featured its strongest field of golfers yet. Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth defeated Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy 3-2 under the lights at the Pelican Golf Club. What were your takeaways?
Well, you know how I feel about those things.
Okay.
You know, the only good thing about it to me is the money it raises for charities. because, look, these guys were playing under the lights. They were playing a golf course with no trouble. I mean, if you watched it, they didn't have any trouble on the golf course.
Okay, that's a good
point.
They just
wailed away at it. It wasn't very long. they were joking and talking 90% of the time and, you know, pulling pranks on each other, taking the key out of the golf cart, putting it in reverse. I mean, you know, to me it was a silly exhibition. And not only that, but they hit horrible shots. If you watched it, they were hitting slices, hooks. On one par five, three of the four missed a green with wedges. So, you know, to me, I think the big interest was to see Tiger Woods, you know, and to see how he was and how he would swing and hit the ball. But it raised great money for charity, you know, which is really the whole deal with that. But as from a golf standpoint and a traditional standpoint, no, it's just an exhibition. You know, if I want to see the four best players in the world play golf, I want to see them grinding under pressure. But you know, it's, I guess it's just all in fun, and it's something for the fans to watch and the money it raises. So anyway, we'll go away from that.
That's right, because a lot of folks were like, hey, how did Tiger look? And I'm thinking best ball is probably not the best place to analyze Tiger Woods' game. We'll just kind of have to wait and see. Hey, he joins us each and every week, former PGA Pro author And that is Larry Miller. It's our final show for 2022, and we will be teeing it up in 2023, and Larry will be back. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year. Thank you, Larry.
Well, the same to you, Big E, and to everybody out there listening. Have great holidays and wonderful New Year. We'll talk to you then.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network, Hour 2 rolls on.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Never miss a moment with the latest sporting news, trends, and stories, and we're going to provide all the highlights at Sports Map Radio Network. You bet, the 2022-23 college basketball season, it is underway, and we're going to break it down in our next segment, and delighted to have joining us for the very first time from The Athletic, and that is Iman Brennan. Hello, good afternoon, Iman.
Hey, Alyssa, how are you?
I'm doing great and super excited to always talk some college basketball. And so give us the skinny, give us the pulse out of the gates so far this season. Which teams have surprised you the most? Who has defied preseason expectations?
Yeah, well, I mean, Purdue, right out, you know, the number one team in the country, right off the top of, like, an unranked team to start the season, lost a ton from last year's team that people might remember. Was a really good team. Jaden Ivey was a top five pick. Trevion Williams, the forward. It was really one of Purdue's best and most talented teams in a long time. Lost to St. Peter's in the NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16, kind of a devastating loss. And then coming back this year, kind of a whole new roster with the exception of Zach Edey, their center. He's 7'4", came to basketball late in life and or later in life, you know, it's not like he's, you know, 7 years old or something, but he has developed now as a guy who used to come off the bench and was promising and really efficient, but didn't play big minutes, into basically the best and most efficient player in the country. Total throwback center, big guy who's just kind of unstoppable, and Purdue has found guards around him and they're unbeaten. They played great, out west in the PK 85 tournament where they played a bunch of ranked teams, beat them handily on three straight nights, and have kind of come out of nowhere to find a roster and a team that is arguably better than the one they had last year when, again, they sent a guy to the NBA draft in the top five. So there's one right at the top of the polls. Another is UConn. Dan Hurley has kind of really gotten it going at UConn. It's a deep team. Adama Sanogo, their center, a really important piece, but they've got a lot of new guys around him as well, a lot of transfers that, you know, you kind of, it's a normal thing now in college basketball to have a lot of guys transferring in and out of places every year.
Yeah.
But you never really know how the blend is going to work or what that team's going to look like, particularly early in the season. Sometimes it just takes a little while for teams to come together. But UConn has gelled right away. They're really deep, really good. They're the only team in the country ranked in the top 10 in both adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency, which is, you know, layman's terms means they're great on both sides of the ball. And they've sprung out of the gates really quickly here too, which is, you know, it's one thing to have one surprise team kind of like Purdue, to have two right at, like I said, at the top of the polls at this stage of the season is really unusual. And that's kind of been college basketball in a nutshell this year. It's a little all over the place.
Uh-huh.
Some of the expected teams coming in have struggled a bit, and some teams we didn't expect are playing really well, kind of top 10, top 15. That's the general rule this year. It's been really fascinating.
Iman Brennan, college hoops reporter for The Athletic. You can check him out online. You were just highlighting, talking about UConn and Purdue. They're right at the top. I want to talk some more about the composition of the roster with Purdue. It seems like, from what I hear you saying, they've got a lot of depth. So do they have what it takes to be that last team standing at the end of April?
We'll see. I mean, I think that's a big talking point right now is that, you know, they look like they're the best or one of the best teams in the country, or are they merely a very good team that has played well early in the year? I do think there is a question with them of when you get into the NCAA tournament and your best player is a 7'4" big guy that you dump the ball to on the low block in a very traditional manner and play sort of inside out, as opposed to really where basketball at all levels now from the NBA on down is a very much an outside-in sort of guard-dominated, wing-dominated game. There is a question to be asked as to whether that really works in the NCAA tournament specifically. I mean, I think if you play the best-of-seven series with Purdue and most other teams in the country, Purdue would be, you know, would win frequently, if not all the time. But in an NCAA tournament, particularly for a program that's had a little bit of trouble getting past the, you know, the first and sometimes the, you know, second weekend of the tournament, getting deep, really have come close to the Final Four a bunch of times in Matt Painter's tenure, haven't gotten there. I do think it's worth asking whether a couple of young freshman guards, as good as they've been early in the year, and kind of the structure of the team, the way it emphasizes Edie, is ideal for an NCAA tournament format.
So speaking of the Big Ten Conference, I think of the Big Ten, the SEC, which one is the best men's basketball conference in the country? What each of those respective leagues have six ranked teams?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I would probably give the edge to the SEC right now. I think Alabama's emergence, obviously they had a huge win at Houston last weekend, which was pretty unexpected. Houston's a really, really good team. Did not expect anybody to beat them at home anytime soon. But Alabama coming away with that win kind of puts them in top five territory nationally, given how well they've played. And you kind of look up and down the SEC. There's a bunch of really good teams at the top. Mississippi State is another one of those surprise teams, as we kind of, you know, alluded to earlier with Purdue and UConn, a top 10 team now that hasn't been in the NCAA tournament more than once in the last decade. And first year coach has really gotten a good sort of veteran group with a few transfers really rolling, playing great defense. Tennessee is probably the best defensive team in the country. And then like Kentucky is one of those teams that we thought was going to be really good. I thought was maybe going to be the best team in the country.
Uh-huh.
As Oscar Tshiebwe, the reigning national player of the year, he just had 28 points and 12 rebounds against Yale the other night. Kentucky kind of has to figure out their offense. They're a little slow and a little stodgy. Fans are a little frustrated, but they've got two losses. They've otherwise played relatively well. You can see they're a work in progress. And I think the talent level on that team puts them in, like, by the end of, you know, January, they may look like one of the best teams in the country again. And then you're really rolling with the SEC. Big Ten's a great conference, too, top to bottom. Indiana will be really interesting to see how their season plays out after a good win against North Carolina and some so-so performance since. But, you know, Purdue is really kind of far and away at the top of the Big Ten for me right now. And I think there's a little bit more strength and depth at the top of the SEC right now.
College hoops reporter for The Athletic, Iman Brennan, is joining us for the very first time at Sports Map Radio Network. Where can our listeners connect with you online, Iman?
Sure. I'm at Twitter, at Iman Brennan, but all of my written work for The Athletic is at theathletic.com. It's /college basketball is primarily where you'll find my stuff. And I write multiple times a week, do a couple columns and feature stories and all that good stuff.
Okay, so you've got the SEC as the premier men's basketball conference in the country. You highlighted, in fact, Mississippi State, and they are rolling. The Bulldogs won their first 9 games, undefeated, an impressive start. What about Missouri? Why are they overachieving? Because they really got things rolling, too.
Sure. Well, again, a great way to jumpstart your program in the year 2022 is through the transfer portal. And first-year Missouri head coach Dennis Gates did that in the offseason, went out in the portal, got a bunch of guys to fit his style of play, which is hyper-pressing, really gambling on the defensive end, try and force as many turnovers as possible, play as fast as possible, try and get layups and fast breaks. And it's generally worked. It did not work against Kansas last weekend. Kansas came in, did not turn the ball over. As DeJuan Harris, the Kansas point guard, put it, like, I just played in the national championship game. It was 70,000 people. Like, this wasn't really stressful for me. I'm paraphrasing, but that was essentially his quote. Kansas was just kind of like swatted Missouri aside. So I think Missouri has had a really nice start to the season, but they've rung up these crazy, oh, wow, look at Missouri's statistical profile. They're turning everybody over at a super high rate, and they're getting all these layups. Well, what a good job I did. Okay, that's all true, but they've been doing that against pretty inferior competition, guards that can't handle that level of pressure. As soon as they stepped up against a team like Kansas, you know, Kansas ran them off the floor. So there's a little bit of, let's see how Missouri does when it gets into league play and has a few more opponents that aren't the kind that you tend to see first year head coach, like, let's build some confidence in our system. Let's help the new guys get settled in. Let's not overly exert ourselves in the non-conference.
Uh-huh.
It will be really interesting to see how that system and these transfers hold up as they get into league play.
Yeah, how long will the Mizzou magic last? Hey, let's do a crossover, and let's talk about the Big 12 Conference. What have we learned from this particular conference? K-State, the Wildcats, they're kind of rocking.
Yeah, it's been a good start for Kansas State. I think the Big 12 is a very underrated basketball league almost every year. You could argue top to bottom, it's been the best league in the country more often than not in the last decade, at least the last half decade. It's smaller size tends to help with that, but the, you know, teams like TCU being good, you know, longtime doormats, TCU are now very solid under Jamie Dixon. People don't remember they took Arizona to the wire, out west in San Diego and in the NCAA tournament last year in the first weekend. Really great game. It's a really, really good league top to bottom. And a team in Texas that looked like was, you know, very likely to be the best team in that conference and has obviously had some pretty serious off-court issues throughout this week, and those are likely to linger, and it'll, you know, who knows how that's going to play out. But even with, even if you take Texas and just set it aside, it remains a very deep, very good basketball conference that the way Kansas has performed, not just against Missouri, but previously against Seton Hall, obviously playing Indiana today, this is like, you know, I thought Kansas was going to take a step back. I think most people did after the national title and after all the people they lost. But the Jayhawks look really, really good, retooled, more versatile, more able to spread the ball, spread the floor. And they've been blowing people out these last couple weeks. So it's that team is taking shape as Bill Self teams usually do.
Since we are in the Big 12 Conference, let's talk some more and zero in on Texas. Obviously, that made quite a splash and big headlines this week, the situation with Coach Beard, who was arrested on assault charges. What is the pulse on the situation? And I just have to wonder, Iman, I mean, how is this going to impact the Longhorn season? And how do you recover from this?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows. I think, obviously, Rodney Terry, Beard's assistant, associate head coach is his official title, has been named the interim head coach for the foreseeable future. Beard has been suspended indefinitely. It is very difficult, without being a legal expert and without having any knowledge of what's going to happen in the future, it is very difficult to imagine him being back on the sideline anytime soon, short of just a total reversal in the details of his charges and the case overall. So, obviously, it's going to affect Texas' season. Him not being, you know, the night of, you know, the day of the charges being announced, and Beard, you know, still being in jail and the news breaking, Texas played Rice at home. That's the type of team that Texas should beat handily. They barely survived in overtime, understandably so, considering the events of the day. I don't know is the answer to that question. It probably won't until we see how the season plays out. But it's obviously going to have an impact, and it's going to be something that really hovers over Texas for the entire season, and really probably should overshadow whatever happens on the basketball court. It's much more serious. You know, what he's the incident that is alleged, the charges that have been filed are much more serious than any basketball impact, and probably will remain front and center with Texas basketball for a long time, to the point that it will probably be difficult to talk about them as a basketball team in a way that is probably not fair to the players, but is just going to be a fact of life for the foreseeable future.
Our college basketball news and notes continues with Iman Brennan after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, we're going to continue our conversation with Iman Brennan from The Athletic. You know, you've covered college hoops for quite some time. You have interactions with the coaches and stuff like this. So I just have to wonder, I mean, what was your reaction when you heard the news, when this went down?
I mean, very surprised. You know, I have covered Chris Beard. I don't know him personally, and obviously, you know, you only ever know so much about everybody's life. You also only ever know so much about people's personalities and their really, you know, at home, individual, personal lives, which they may or may not share with the public. But I don't, you know, I don't think there is any, I don't think anybody who's covered him extremely closely, I don't think any of his fellow coaches or colleagues would have suggested that this was like the kind of thing that, you know, had ever been, there's never been any rumors or, you know, murmurs, at least not that I'm aware of, that this was in his personality. So, yeah, it was very surprising. And obviously, like you said, it's a massive deal in and of itself. Like any individual accused of what he's been accused of, that's a huge situation. It's obviously also has knock-on effects for the University of Texas, which has given him a very large contract to kind of, you know, hired him away from Texas Tech to salvage their basketball program. He's an alumni of Texas. He said he couldn't turn down the opportunity. He's a very highly paid coach who's considered one of the best coaches in the country and has established that reputation in a very short space of time. And it would not be surprising if whatever happens at Texas, this ultimately derails his career to the point where you don't hear that much about him anymore. And maybe he'll still be coaching somewhere in a very small, you know, at a very small out-of-the-way school 5-10 years from now. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. We have no idea, but it's serious enough that, like, this extremely promising coaching career that he had built for himself is very much in jeopardy.
Absolutely. We'll just have to wait and see. Coach Beard is, as you said, second season coaching at Texas, named head coach after 5 seasons as the head coach at Texas Tech. We are up against the clock. 30 seconds. Let's talk some Oklahoma. What are your expectations for my seniors this year?
I think probably, if I had to give you a range,
come on, E.
somewhere between the 25th and 40th best team in the country would be like the outcome I'd be looking for. Were I an Oklahoma fan, I think that's probably reasonable. They played well against Arkansas, but they didn't have the ability to get over the line against Arkansas, which is kind of where Oklahoma was last year. A team that was in a lot of games, played hard, played well, but didn't have that extra 5% of talent to win enough to get into the tournament and really, you know, really push sort of that top 25. I kind of feel like that's where they are again this year, but I think they've retooled a little bit. Porter Moses is going to get it going. It might be a year too early, but I think the program is in a solid place and headed in the right direction.
Good stuff. Check him out with The Athletic, College Hoops reporter, and that is Iman Brennan. You have a great weekend. Happy holidays, and we will talk to you in 2023. Thanks, E.
Likewise. Take care.
Big thank you to Iman Brennan and all of our special guests joining us over the past 2 hours at Sportsman.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.